The story is told of a three-generational family. Grandparents, parents, and a grandson. The parents are from Shomer Shabbos, mitzvos. But their son, Nebuch, as he grew older, stopping Shomer Torah mitzvos, stopping from... He did marry a Jewish girl, but there really was no Torah in the household. And they had a child. That was the grandson. And the grandson grew up knowing that he was Jewish, but not knowing very much at all about Yiddishkeit. The grandchild and his parents lived at quite a bit of a distance from the grandparents, and they hardly got to visit them, and when they came, it was usually for very short visits. But once, Vayhi Hayom, the grandson must have been around 5 or 6 years old, and his parents decided to take a two-week vacation. And what were they going to do with their son when they went on their two-week vacation? They decided they were going to leave him in the care of his grandparents. The grandparents were thrilled, excited, wonderful. So they made the long trip to the grandparents' house. And the grandchild was very excited to be 2 weeks with his grandparents. And then the parents went on their vacation. The grandparents decided to make the most of what they could during those 2 weeks. And aside from creating obviously a very loving environment for the grandson, they started teaching him a little bit about Yiddishkeit. They talked about Shabbos, and they had Shabbos, and they talked about Kashrus. The grandfather showed him tefillin, they talked about tzitzis, he showed him the mezuzah, and the kid used to kiss the mezuzah. And they talked about God, Ribbono Shel Olam, told him stories from Bereishis. And it was a wonderful time. But very quickly, the 2 weeks passed, and before they knew it, the parents were back from their vacation, and they came to pick up their son. And one can imagine that there were tearful goodbyes. Wasn't so easy to say goodbye. They don't see him that often. And the grandson hugged his grandfather and he hugged his grandmother and he gave him big kisses. But he was also excited to see his parents and he was going back home. So he ran to the car and got into the car with his parents. And the grandparents are standing by the doorway and they're waving. And just before the car pulled away, all of a sudden the car door opens. And the grandson comes running back to where the grandparents are staying. And he picks up his hand and he touches the mezuzah and he kisses it. And he says, "Goodbye, God." When someone spends a year of study in yeshiva or in seminary in Eretz Yisrael, they're on a spiritual high. It's a life of aliyah ruchanit. The days are filled with Torah, with tefillah, with chesed. And you're surrounded with people who admire these values. You're a bus rider, sometimes even just a brief walk from the Kotel. You can tell that it's Shabbos, not only by the beautifully set table in the house, but also by the peaceful serenity outside in the streets. Yiddishkeit is discernible all over. And you really identify with David HaMelech's request. Achas sha'alti me'eis Hashem, osa avakesh, shipti beveis Hashem kol yimei chayai, achzoz b'noam Hashem, ulevakeh b'hichalo. And if, as Chazal tell us, ein mayim el Torah, then one who studies in Eretz Yisrael is surrounded by abundant rainfall. But when you board that plane and you land in Chutz Laretz, you can feel like an alien landing on a foreign planet. Things that were once so familiar now seem so strange. The downpour of Ruchnius has turned into a desert drought. How does one cope? How do you survive? And hopefully even thrive? One of the major dilemmas that's caused by the return to Chutz La'aretz is the lack of clarity. That basic path of life, that Derech HaChayim, that was so clear at the end of the year in yeshiva or in seminary, no longer is that clear. Broad daylight somehow or another has turned into murky twilight, and the clear differences between right and wrong, or between good and bad, are much harder to discern. Now, the truth is that this phenomenon is very old. When Adam HaRishon was created, he had great clarity in what was Emes and what was Sheker. But when he ate from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra, everything changed. What does the term Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra mean? Rav Nevenzel explains in one of his Sichot that the Lashon of Das is from the Lashon similar to Vayeda Adam Eschava Ishto. Deya is often a language of chibur, of attachment. And what happened when Adam HaRishon ate from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'ra is that the Tov V'ra became attached to each other. And that clear distinction that once existed between good and bad was now removed. And it became so, so difficult to always discern the difference. Many years ago, I heard from Rav Lichtenstein Shlita that if he could add one more line to the Seder Avidui on Yom HaKippurim, when we list all those Al-Chaits, Al-Chait Shechatanu Lefanecha Ba'onu Suvaratzal, Val-Chait Shechatanu Lefanecha Be'ima Tzalev, and we go through the entire Aleph Beis, two Al-Chaits for each letter. If he could add one more, it would be Al-Chait Shel Yi Seder Adifuyot, the Chait of the lack of priorities. We are so often faced with conflicting issues that everything seems important. And we lose our ability to make decisions, to make proper decisions, because we can't figure out which is the real priority. Should I shake the man's hand if he extends it? Should you lower your standards of proper dress in order not to stand out in your community? Should you answer the questions that the women in shul ask you in the middle of davening? Should you go to the movie that you're invited to attend by your old high school friends? How much should you compromise your values in order not to insult anyone about anything? Why is it so difficult for us to maintain that clarity of thought? The clarity of thought that existed while we were in Eretz Yisrael, while we were in seminary. Why is it so difficult now? The Rambam writes at the beginning of Perek Vav of Hilchos Deos, Derech Briyaso Shel Adam Lios Nimshach B'Deosav U'B'Ma'asav Achareyav V'Chaveirav Noeg K'minag Anshei Medina So. Hashem created us as beings that tend to mimic the opinions and the actions of our surroundings, whether it be family, friends, or the general population. There's a tremendous amount of social pressure to conform. And that creates some degree of unwillingness on our part to stand out. We don't want to be cast in the role of, oh, there goes the Rebbetzin. Or what happened? You became such a frumi. What can be done? How do we continue to grow in an environment that is always not so hospitable? Let's try to examine a number of strategies. The Midrash tells us that when Avraham Avinu was on his way to the Akedah, the Satan turned himself into a river. And Avraham Avinu had to cross that river to continue towards Har Moriah. Avraham entered the water and he continued walking until the water level had reached his neck. And it was threatening to drown him. What does Avraham do? The Midrash says that he looked heavenwards and he davened. And he turned to HaKadosh Baruch and he said, I'm trying to fulfill your mitzvah. If I drown or Yitzchak drowns, how will your wishes be fulfilled? And at that moment, the river immediately dried up. Whenever we feel overwhelmed, the most effective tool that we have is tefillah. Just like Avram, we need to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we need to ask for that siyata d'shmaya in order that we can be an Oved Hashem. It can be your own personal tefillah. Or it can be something from the Siddur. Whatever inspires you. But you need to daven. One possible suggestion. Pay attention tomorrow morning to the Hiratzon that we say at the end of Birchos HaShachar. And listen for what we daven. Shetagileinu b'sorasecha. V'dabekeinu b'mitzvosecha. V'yal tevyeinu lo lidei chet. V'lo lidei avera v'yavon. V'lo lidei nisayon. V'lo lidei vizayon. V'al tashlet banu yetzerara. V'achikeinu me'adamra u'mechavera. V'dabekeinu b'yetzeratov u'v'maasim tovim. V'chof es yitzreinu l'shtabed loch. Usneinu hayom uvechol yom l'chein l'chesed l'rachamim be'inecha uve'inei chol ro'enu v'sigmaleinu chasadim tovim. Is there a better way to start off each day of our lives? Tefillah down is only half of the dialogue. Tefillah is our opportunity to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But how do we hear what Hashem is saying to us? There is no nevuah bizman hazeh. So how do I hear Hashem's messages? That's accomplished through Talmud Torah. And although women are not obligated per se in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, women are certainly required to have an ongoing relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam. And learning Torah can play a clear role in that relationship. Most of you still have the ability at this stage in your lives to set aside some time for learning. Choose something that interests you. Whatever you like. Tanakh, Halacha, Machshava. But learn. And keep up that dialogue, that loving dialogue with Hashem Yisbarach. He wants it. He He wants that dialogue. And that dialogue draws us much closer to the clarity of mind that we so desperately seek. Yosef HaTzadik was bombarded daily to forsake his values. Torah tells us in Parshas Vayeshev that Eishes Potiphar was relentless. And eventually, that constant pressure took its toll. The Pasuk says, Vayavo habaisa la'asos malachto. Vein ish me'anshei abayis sham babayis. Yosef came that day to the house to take care of his business. And there was nobody else in the house. And the Gemara in Sota brings two opinions. And according to one of the opinions in the Gemara, Yosef had decided that day that he was finally going to give in. To give in to the seductive powers of Eishes Potiphar. But something happened at the last moment. Eishes Potiphar grabs Yosef's clothing and she says, Shichva imi. And yet Yosef runs out of the house. What happened? What happened in that last moment that saved Yosef? Chazal tell us that the image of his saintly father Yaakov appeared before him. And Yosef began to think, what would his father say? What would his father do? Yaakov didn't have an easy life. His brothers hated him. His brother hated him. And wanted to kill him. He needed to run away. And he never saw his mother again. He was tricked by his uncle. His daughter was assaulted. And the brother's reactions, his son's reactions, endangered the entire family. His beloved wife died in childbirth. And yet not once did Yaakov's trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu waver. And if despite everything, Yaakov's emunah remained steadfast, and Yosef thought to himself, how could I act any differently? We all need a Dmus Diyoken. We all need an image of a role model that will give us chizuk in trying times. It could be a family member. It could be a gadol. Could be a mentor, but someone whose very image gives us chizuk. There are people who have a picture of the Chafetz Chaim hanging by their house phone. Why? Because if they're looking at the Chafetz Chaim and they feel that he's looking at them, then how? How could they possibly speak Lashon Hara while they're on the telephone? That's the koach of a Dmus Diyoken, of that image. In Pirkei Avos, Rabbi Gamliel instructs us, Asei Lecha Rav. Why? Why do we need to have a Rav? It's not only to answer a specific question such as what bracha do you make on Crispix? And it's not just to explain some sort of difficulty. How come three malachim came to visit Avram, but only two went to see Lot? Person needs to have a Rav because you need to be able to have someone to seek guidance from. Someone with life experience who understands and appreciates Torah and its values. How do you choose a Rav? Of course, he has to be knowledgeable. And he certainly needs to be a Yarei Shamayim. But additionally, you need to feel comfortable speaking with that person. And you have to feel confident that he understands the complexities of your dilemmas. The Rav who answers your Hilchos Shabbos questions doesn't have to be the same person that you turn to with the questions about balancing the complexities of daily life. But you need to have that Rav. Rav Gamliel, though, isn't satisfied with instructing people to have a Rav. He continues and he says, "Asei lecha Rav, uknei lecha chaver." And that second piece of advice is often more crucial than the first. Now, what kind of chaver should I acquire for myself? I think we can all agree that that chaver needs to be a chaver tov, a good friend. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked his Talmidim to choose one character trait that a person should adhere to, Rabbi Yeshua responded, Chaver Tov. Now, how would you define a Chaver Tov? I don't know, someone who's fun to be around, someone who makes you laugh, maybe someone who will lend you her biology notes. It's not the way that Rabbeinu Avadya Mibar Tanur explains the term. Do you know what the Bar Tanur says is a Chaver Tov? Chaver Tov Shemochicho Kisheroa Oso Ose Davar Sheino Hagun. A Chaver Tov is someone who will rebuke you and give you Musa if you're doing something improper. Now, why in the world is that person considered a Chaver Tov? And the answer is because that person cares about you more than she cares about the friendship. Your well-being, whether it's your physical well-being, your spiritual well-being, is the most important thing to her. And she's willing to risk everything, including that friendship, because she wants to help you. That kind of person is truly a chaver tov. Many years ago, I was talking with one of the MMY alumni who was studying in university. And I asked her, how's life in university? And she told me, but the truth is that everyone could really use their own personal mashgiach. Not a mashgiach of kashrus, a mashgiach ruchani. Their own personal mashgiach to make sure that they're staying on the derech hayosher. It's very hard to have your own personal mashgiach. But you can all seek out that chaver tov. And that chaver tov can fill that role. But if it's going to be a successful friendship, then you need to be one who, in the language of Chazal, is oev es hatochachos, that you're willing to accept rebuke. You have to be somebody who truly wants to grow, and you're willing to listen to well-meaning, honest, constructive criticism. And then you'll have a true friendship. But in addition to the right chaver, you need to choose the right chevra. There's no learning institution in the world that caters to identical clones of one another. There will always be people who can have a positive influence on you and those who don't. Remember the Rambam that we quoted earlier. Derech b'riyaso shel adam liyos nimshach b'deyosav u'b'ma'asav achareyav v'chaverav. You're heavily influenced by your surroundings. Now you can't always choose the city that you live in. You can't always choose the most appropriate community. But you can choose your immediate chevra. And they can make a world of a difference. Are you going to choose your chevra based on a shared background? Based on a shared vision for the future? Is your dorm room run as a microcosm of Manhattan? Or is it set up as an ir miklat, protecting you from the negative influences of the street? That same halacha in the Rambam continues. Lefichach Sarich Adam lehischaber latzadikim v'leishev eitzala chachomim tamid k'dei shegilmad mima'aseihem. Hang out with the tzadikim. Sit and shmooze with the chachomim. Choose your chevra wisely. And finally, we need to learn to limit the exposure that we have to that which is spiritually harmful. We shouldn't fool ourselves into thinking that relatively minor things don't affect us. People will often say, I'm a mature adult, or I need to know what's going on in the world, and therefore, it's okay to read what I want, to watch what I want, to attend events that I want. I know who I am, and these things, they won't have any negative influence on me. I want to tell you that there's a frightening medrash which paints a different picture. The Torah tells us in Parshas Toldos that at the age of 40, Esav marries two Chiti women. And the result was, Vatiyena moras ruach liYitzchak uLerivka. They were a source of spiritual rebellion to Yitzchak and to Rivka. That's what the pasuk says. And the Medrash asks why the Torah uses the phrase Li Yitzchak Ule Rivka, to Yitzchak and to Rivka. It should have used the simpler phrase Li Yitzchak Virivka, to Yitzchak and Rivka. Why to Yitzchak and to Rivka? And the Medrash's response is that this Moras Ruach, this thing that felt like spiritual rebellion, was first felt by Yitzchak and only later by Rivka. Didn't happen simultaneously. Why? The Medrash says because Yitzchak grew up in Avram's household, while Rivka grew up in the home of Bisuel and Lavan. Yitzchak was bothered by his Chiti daughters-in-law and their Avodah Zara sooner than she was, than Rivka was. Because he had a different upbringing. Do why is this medrash so frightening? Think for a moment. Esav is 40 years old when he marries these women. Rivka was married to Yitzchak for 20 years before they had children. This means that Rivka has been out of her parents' home and living together with Yitzchak for 60 years. And according to one opinion in the Medrash, Rivka left her parents' home at the age of 3. And nevertheless, after all these decades, Rivka is still bearing the consequences of that brief exposure to an Avodah Zarah lifestyle. So let me ask you, how could we fool ourselves into thinking that we're not affected by that which we expose ourselves to? Are we greater than Rivka? Are the positive influences in our lives more powerful than living with Yitzchak? Now, does this mean that we need to build a teva like Noach and close ourselves off from the rest of the world? Not necessarily. Like Avraham and Sarah, we can live in an open tent. But on condition that this openness is there so that we have an ability to share our values with others. But not to allow the negative values of the outside world penetrate our Mikdash Ma'at. Chazal tell us, Haba li taher misayin lo. One who is striving for purity will merit divine assistance. Bilvavi mishkan evne. Build that mishkan in your hearts and Hashem will dwell there. And like the tents of Sarah and Rivka, may the cloud of glory always hover over your beautiful homes.